107.
Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Test Talks, a podcast dedicated to all things test automation related. I'm your host, Joe, from joecolantonio.com. And today, we're going to be speaking with Al Swaggart, author of Automate the Boring Stuff with Python, Practical Programming for Total Beginners. But first, let's hear it for our awesome sponsor, Sauce Labs. Today's episode is sponsored by Sauce Labs. Sauce Labs makes test automation awesome. Sauce's cloud-based Selenium Grid helps developers test web and mobile apps across more than 400 browser and OS platforms. Sauce also supports Appium and popular JavaScript unit testing frameworks and integrates with all the top programming languages, test frameworks, and CI systems. With built-in video recording, debugging tools, and secure tunneling for firewall testing, Sauce helps you ship better software faster. Sign up at saucelabs.com with promo code TESTTALKS14 and get 20 hours of automated testing for free. So if you're like most people, you might think that only geniuses can become programmers. In this episode, Al Swaggart will share how easy it is for someone with little to no programming experience can get started automating some of the most boring tasks that fill our days. So if you struggled in the past to learn a programming language for test automation, today you're going to discover it's much easier to get started than you probably think. Also, I think that most people limit themselves to thinking of test automation as end-to-end testing, and they leave out a lot of other pieces that could be automated to save someone time within their workflow. So you may not be able to automate something from beginning to end, but there may be a process or something that a user that's working in your company is doing over and over and over again that could be automated. So to automate something like that, maybe someone has to deal with a lot of PDF files or a lot you need to read from an Excel file. For example, I have a Thucydides report that's generated after all my test runs. And basically, I like to go and I run a Python script that reads in some high-level information, some high-level statistics. It does some calculation, and it populates a dashboard with that information. And before this was automated, this was actually something that someone would manually go in. They would look at the numbers. They would do the calculation. They would go to the dashboard. They would enter it in. And the worst part is they always had to remember that every 2 weeks they would have to go to this dashboard and enter in this value. And so you can imagine that the person always forgot, or they didn't do it on time, or that person was out and the other person didn't know how to get the calculation that this person was running. So creating this automated Python script that did it for us saved us a lot of time and headaches. And also, rather than using our typical Java programming language, which would have taken a lot of code, we created a Python script, and the Python script really is 7 lines of code. That's it. It's crazy how easy it is. So these types of things can also be automated, and using a programming language like Python can really make it easier and quicker for you to create these types of tests. So for people that are brand new to programming or people that are currently programming, I think you're going to get a lot out of this episode. Check it out. Hey, Al. Welcome to Test Talks.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So before we get started, can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Well, I've been a software developer for about the past 8 or 9 years. I've been living in the San Francisco Bay Area for most of that time. About 5 years ago, I got started writing programming tutorials. A friend of mine was an au pair for this really intelligent 10-year-old who asked her to ask me, you know, if there were any programming tutorials that he could find. And so she asked me to find some, and I really couldn't find any that were really good. I mean, the internet has a lot of information that's out there, but it's all in different pieces. And so I really just wanted to start from scratch and write something really simple. Of course, that really simple tutorial ballooned into book length, and eventually I just self-published it, and people seemed to really like it. So I wrote a second book, and then a third book, and then the fourth book is Automate the Boring Stuff with Python. I left my software developer job about a year ago and started writing the book full-time, and it's just come out in the last few weeks, and I'm really pleased with it.
Awesome. So actually, that's what I'd like to start off covering is talking about your book, Automate the Boring Stuff with Python. So what was the main reason for you writing this book? I know you've written, I think, three or four other ones before this. So why another book on Python?
Well, yeah, I've written three books before, but they were all sort of aimed at either kids or teenagers, or at least that's what I would tell people so that adults would think, oh, well, programming's for kids, so maybe I can actually do it, and they wouldn't be scared off. You know, those books were concentrated on games and fun little crypto programs. I really wanted something for adults with office jobs or adults who had jobs where they just use computers every day, which is a pretty substantial portion of the workforce, just so that they could learn programming as a practical way to automate a lot of things that they would normally have to do with a bunch of clicking and typing. I would just hear stories from my non-developer friends who said, yeah, well, you know, today at the office, I spent 4 hours opening PDF files, finding this one line that had some statistic in it, and then copying and pasting that into a spreadsheet, and then moving to the next of hundreds of PDFs. And I would think, like, wow, you could probably spend about half an hour writing a script to do that instead of spending hours just doing it by hand. And so there are all these little stories like this, and there isn't any software written really to do these because they're very particular to an individual's workflow. But if you knew programming and how to just cobble together this custom script, then you could really save yourself a lot of time. So I thought, well, there's got to be something out there already like this, and there really isn't. There's a lot of books that are focused on turning people into six-figure, making rock star developers, or for people who are already developers and programmers in different languages if you want to learn Python, but nothing for complete beginners who didn't really want to become software engineers or computer scientists, and teaching them just enough programming to be helpful.
Awesome. Yeah, what I really love about this book, besides the cover, anytime I see the word automate and a robot on a cover, I'm usually reading that book. So like you said, this book is for total beginners, but what I love is you're teaching them practical things. So it's not like a hello world and, you know, silly things. It's you actually teach them how to interact with Excel, like you said, reading PDF files. You have a section on web scraping. So why would you recommend someone learn to do these types of things using Python rather than, say, a language like Java or C Sharp?
Oh, well, Python has always been my go-to language for complete beginners. It has a really gentle learning curve. It works on Windows, Linux, and Mac. And also, it's still a serious programming language that professional developers use. I think there's an XKCD comic that really extols all the virtues of Python and, you know, says, you know, hello world is one line long, unlike Java, where you sort of just have to remember what public static void string main bracket. Yeah, it's been a while since I've done Java programming, but with Python you can remember how to do all of these things in your head, and also it doesn't force you to learn object-oriented programming. I completely skip that in the book. A lot of freshman computer science topics I completely skip over. There's no sort of sorting algorithms or any discussion of things like that in the book. Python really just allowed the code to be very terse, kind of like Perl, except also readable, unlike Perl.
Yeah, so I definitely agree. And what I really love about it also is that, so even though Python is a programming language and you're teaching beginners with it, would you consider it still, you wouldn't consider it a toy language, right? Would you consider it that you still really advanced things if you wanted to?
Oh, not at all. The software developer job I had for 5 years before I left to write the book full time was using Python and JavaScript. I mean, Python is definitely up there, up with, you know, C# and Java as far as professional software engineering languages. I think it's used more. Don't quote me on this. I think Python is more popular than Ruby even, because it also has the Django web app framework similar to Ruby on Rails. But, you know, Python can also be used as a scripting language if you're a sysadmin and you just need to write simple scripts, or it can be used to write full-blown applications as well.
Awesome. So I don't know if you thought about this user case, but my audience is mostly test automation engineers, and some of them are coming from a non-developer background. So what's great about this book is it teaches them the basics of Python to get started with Python, gets them up running quickly, And then they can apply those skills to test automation, so driving a browser.
Oh, yeah. So the book is split into two parts. The first part is just a brand new Python tutorial for people who have never programmed before. So it's fairly typical in that. But part two, which I think is about two-thirds of the book, roughly, even if you're a seasoned developer, you can just look at part two, which goes into, you know, there's a chapter on Excel, a chapter on modifying images, a chapter on GUI automation.
Excellent. So what's the difference between web scraping and GUI automation?
Oh, okay. So web scraping is, I cover a few different modules for it. First, I start going off with requests and beautiful soup to download URLs and then parse the HTML from them. And that's really nice if you just have a simple static web page where you just need to find some bit of information that's buried somewhere in the HTML. Requests will help you download the web page itself, and beautiful soup will help you parse it and find that information. But if you have something a bit more complicated, like it's a web app that you need to fill out a form or log into something, the web scraping chapter covers Selenium, which actually launches Firefox browser that you can then simulate clicking on various form buttons and then filling in forms and interacting with JavaScript on the browser itself. However, for the GUI automation chapter, this is just raw. You can control the keyboard and mouse and send mouse clicks anywhere on the screen or simulate typing. So this works with, it could work with a web browser, but it could also work with any application that's on your computer. So if you have some program that really wasn't designed to be automated, if it doesn't have an API or anything like that, you can then just brute force control the keyboard and mouse to have it automate all these tasks for you and just do all the clicking and typing for you.
Cool. So are there any examples in automate the boring stuff with Python that you think most people, either new to Python or even seasoned people that have been using Python for a while, unaware of, that has, you know, certain functionality you think isn't used enough or people just don't know about it?
I was actually surprised by how many modules there were for Python just for interacting with lots of different things like Excel files or parsing PDF files. I was really afraid that a lot of this would have to sort of tell people to open binary files just from their Python program and then try to figure out the format from there. So the second part is basically a wide coverage of various third-party modules. So it makes it really easy to just, I didn't realize that there was an Excel module that could open just spreadsheets and not only just read and write cells to and from the spreadsheet, but it can also do things like styling and formatting and creating charts. And there's such a wide range of things that I didn't realize was even possible. I added the GUI automation chapter at the very end just so as a sort of brute force way that, you know, if you want to do something and there is no module for whatever file format that you're working with, then if all else fails, you can just control the mouse and just have it click and operate the application for you.
Awesome. Yeah, I just want to reiterate that it's not hardcore automation, but it does allow you to automate some things. Maybe that it's a thick client application that, like you said, doesn't have an API, but you still maybe could get around some simple things using it. I know Selenium, which was made for automated browsers, does have a Python language binding. So people, once they learn Python, could easily just import the Selenium binding and be able to automate a browser straight up in Python, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I had heard about Selenium before, but I always thought it was some hardcore automation tool. And then when I actually started using it for writing the chapter in the book, I was actually surprised at how fairly straightforward and easy it was to use. The Python bindings make it pretty simple. You can do most things in just 5 or 6 lines of code.
I definitely agree. And what I love about it is, especially with Python, it's just like you said, it's so much easier. It's not as verbose as something like Java or C Sharp. I'm always curious to know why more testers or developers don't use more of these scripting languages if they're doing automation.
Well, I guess this is just me thinking out loud, but I would say that, a lot of people just sort of learn some sort of software tool, and then that's sort of their main go-to for a lot of different things. I'm certainly guilty about that with Python. I think it's a great programming language, so I tend to use it all the time. But I remember thinking about shell scripts. You know, I really have this huge distaste of shell scripts, I have to say, because it's great when they're really small and it's like, oh, I want to run these 5 commands all at once. So you can just put them in a shell script and and that's fine. But then eventually that script starts growing in size and you want it to do a lot more sophisticated functionality, and a lot of things are actually more suited for a real programming language. And I remember one time I was working with this one shell script at work that somebody had written, and it was just this massive thing. And I thought, I wonder if there's a debugger for shell scripts. And that's when I realized maybe we should actually just convert this into an actual programming language and have access to all those tools. So I thought, you know, Python would be a pretty good scripting language for people to learn in order to do basically whatever they need to do and have the full power of Python and all of its modules behind it.
I guess what I'm usually wary about is if I can use, when I use Java or C#, I know I'm going to have an IDE, I'm going to have really good debugging tools. So if someone's starting with Python, have you ever used something like Iron Python within Visual Studio, or are there built-in debugging tools with just standard Python that someone could use?
I haven't really. I mean, you know, it goes back to the Hello World in Python is just one line long. I really haven't found a need to have an IDE just to memorize all of the different Python commands. It's usually fairly simple to do whatever I need to do in Python. I remember whenever I work with Java and I have to open a file and read content out, I always have to look up the documentation for, you know, it's like, oh, buffered reader, and then that connects to this and that connects to that. But, you know, with Python, it's just the open function, and then there's a read method, and, you know, and then I'm set. So I'm most of the time I'm just using something like Sublime Text or Vim, or even sometimes just IDLE, the IDE that comes with Python itself.
Is there one thing you see over and over again in your experience that most people either creating or learning Python are doing wrong and maybe just aren't getting?
I'd have to say probably just, well, a lot of sort of new software, a lot of things that would be considered unsophisticated for a software engineer to do, just like using lots of global variables or having something that's like an if-else statement that's several, you know, if, else if, else if, else if, else if, just incredibly long when it could just be tightened up. But for this book, I sort of am, because I'm aiming it at complete beginners who aren't really interested in becoming software engineers, I really don't go into that. I think at one point I say, you know, it's fine if you just use lots of global variables, because most of the scripts that are going to be written by people using this book are probably only going to be a couple hundred lines long at most.
Right.
So a lot of, you know, writing maintainable code techniques and things to remember, it's be nice if people learn that as well, but it's not really strictly necessary. And because Python itself is just so readable to begin with, usually it doesn't become a huge problem.
Awesome. So I guess my next question was, for someone that is using it, say, for the job, for development, at least developing test scripts, any advice on how engineers can make their Python code maintainable and less brittle?
Well, there's PEP8, which is the Python document that goes into just the style guide. And that gives a lot of really useful hints. I really also like the Google Python code style guide as far as how to just set up your code. The one place that I always disagree with PEP8, and people always email me and say, well, you're violating PEP8 here, is I really prefer using snake case instead of underscores to separate words inside of variable names and other identifiers like that. It's always just been a preference of mine, but then whenever I produce any code whatsoever, I'm sure to have somebody come up and say, well, technically, according to PEP8, you should be adding, you know, underscores to these. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then I always point to the part of PEP8 that says, you know, just be reasonable. You know, a foolish consistency is a hobgoblin of small minds. And, yeah, I mean, PEP8 says, you know, well, you don't always have to follow this document. But a bit more practically, I know Sublime Text comes with an automatic linter that will check your code as you type it out. So if you're using Sublime Text or whatever editor you're using, you can have something like that, which will just say, oh, you know, you forgot to initialize this variable here, or, you know, I've never seen this variable because you have a slight typo on that. That can actually end up saving you a lot of time. And going ahead, and I was sort of waffling a bit when I was writing this book about adding a chapter on debugging, because I thought maybe that's a really hardcore topic that casual programmers wouldn't need to know. But, you know, learning how to use debugging and assertions and throwing exceptions and those things can really save you a lot of time, even in the short term, I believe.
Awesome. So you did mention at the beginning of the call that you're I guess, a full-time writer now. So do you have any plans or what's in the works for any new books, maybe where you do focus more on the developer type person?
I keep telling my friends, like, I think I've developed a book writing problem. Because I wrote the first one and the second and third one, and I thought, okay, no more books. And then I thought, well, okay, I'll come out of retirement to pull off one last heist. I'm still interested in sort of programming education, especially for young people. So I had one idea for a Scratch programming book, and then also other ideas for sort of a freshman computer science text that mostly used as much visualization as possible and had as little text as possible. There's the canonical Introduction to Algorithms textbook, which I remember using for one of my freshman computer science courses, and thinking, like, wow, this is great, but it's also a really dense tome, and you really have to spend, you know, 20 minutes a page just parsing everything. And it would really be a lot nicer if this had a lot more visualizations, a lot more graphs. And it's sort of, you know, explaining algorithms like I'm 5 years old. Yeah, I think that a lot of computer programming, it has this sort of, you know, rocket surgery reputation of being incredibly difficult and hard, when really that's not the case at all.
I don't know why this question just popped in my head, but in the tech field, there's a lot of conversations about diversity and such. And for some reason, I think maybe if you start education early with programming and introducing children to programs, how to program, concepts like that, you know, as they get older, you'd have a diverser field of developers or something like that. So do you feel, why do you seem like you have such a passion for teaching maybe young adults and children how to program?
Well, first it started off just purely practical. I mean, I was writing this tutorial for a friend of a friend of a friend who had a 10-year-old. But at the same time, I thought, you know, well, programming, I remember I'm one of those people who learned programming in the third grade, but I hate telling people that story because it makes people think like, oh, well, Al's been, you know, programming since he was in the third grade. But I mean, really, if you look at all of my code that I produce between, you know, third grade and senior year of high school, you could probably sit down and learn everything that I learned in those several years in about, I don't know, every weekend for a couple months, maybe. I mean, it really wasn't that impressive. I just had this, I was introduced to it at a young age, so I didn't think of it as this intimidating topic. It was just something to play around with. So I think that it's really important to introduce kids, just to make them comfortable with it, and not just comfortable with being consumers of software. I mean, lots of kids are using smartphones and iPads, but also give them the idea that, you know, they could actually write their own software and control this. And diversity is also a very important aspect, not just for, you know, having the appearance of political correctness, but having diverse teams gives a lot of different viewpoints and input into creating software. I mean, I can always tell software that's just sort of been developed by some lone programmer, because they'll usually have this atrocious user interface. and it's sort of like, well, if they had just, you know, I mean, it makes sense to them, of course. But I mean, even still today, whenever I'm writing applications and software, I just try to show it to as many different people as possible. And they'll always tell me stuff that, you know, I didn't really even think of. You know, it's like, well, you know, why don't you have this feature, or do you really need this feature? And so I can just go back to the drawing board and redesign things and maybe add new things or change other parts. But it's really important. I like to spend some time away from my computer and just follow up on different hobbies and interests, mostly just as a source of new ideas. I mean, I have a, you know, like everybody, I suppose, I have a very long Netflix queue of movies that I watch. But, you know, I try to do like an 80-20 rule where, you know, 20% of the time I just watch movies that I'd otherwise have no interest in whatsoever, you know, instead of watching RoboCop for the 30th time.
Awesome. So, like I said, you do have three other books. So if someone wanted to learn more about your books, what would you say about inventing your own computer games? Would that be something that a total beginner would be able to pick up and learn, or is that...
Oh, yes. Yeah. So the other three books I have, all of my books are released under Creative Commons licenses, so they're free to read and download online. So the first three books are at inventwithpython.com, and I've written them all to be appropriate for complete beginners. The second one, the making games with Python and Pygame, assumes you have a little bit of Python programming experience. So if you ever, you know, if you've read one of the other books, or if you've, you know, gone halfway through Code Academy or something like that, then that'll be a plenty of experience to read all the books. But I aim them at complete beginners for the most part. Yeah, I really didn't want to have sort of this feeling that the person is like, oh, I'm not qualified to read this book. You know, I really want people to just, you know, go ahead and give it a try. And then automate the boring stuff with Python itself. You can read online in an HTML format at automatetheboringstuff.com.
How do you quit your job and be able to write and then give away all this stuff? what's the secret?
Oh, I'd say my secret as far as living in San Francisco and doing this
exactly.
is I have incredibly cheap rent nice. Compared to the rest of San Francisco. But yeah, I've for most of my life, yeah, I guess like a lot of young software developers who read Reddit and other places like that, I thought like, well, one day I'll do a startup and then maybe become a billionaire or something like that. But for the most part, I mean, for the last 8 years, I've just been really playing it safe and having a 9-to-5 day job as a software developer. And I guess I also never really fully got rid of my college student instincts. So I kind of live fairly cheaply. But after a while, I thought like, well, okay, here's an opportunity to do something, write this book. I could leave my job and do this full time. And I'm at the point where I have enough experience and I have savings. So probably now is a good time to start taking risks. And yeah, so I went off and did that. And it's really great because I'd started writing Automate while I still had my job. And I thought like, well, okay, I'll have this done in 8 months. And then 9 months later, I'm only half the way through. And I realized, you know, if I hadn't left my job and did this full time, you know, we would probably be having this interview sometime in 2019 or something like that. But I mean, it's really individual to each person. You just sort of have to figure out, what risk are you willing to take? And so, you know, I think I took a risk, but it's a very measured and calculated risk.
Very cool. Okay, Al, before we go, is there one piece of actionable advice you can give someone to have them improve their learning Python, and let us know the best way to find or contact you?
The best advice I can give, and this applies to complete beginners and also seasoned software developers, is that computers aren't magical. If you're getting some problem or something's going wrong, there ends up always being a reason. It might be this really obscure reason, like your code was doing something that you really didn't intend or something that you didn't really think of before. But at the core of it, there's always going to be some reason there. And so this is really helpful because a lot of times when I'm debugging, I just kind of like, well, maybe if I turn the computer off and on again, it'll start working. Or, I don't know, just worrying that maybe it's, you know, I'm going crazy and that's the reason why this code doesn't work. But really, there's always ends up being some reason. It'll probably be something ridiculously simple that you've just forgotten. But there is, at the bottom of all of your searching for whatever the issue is, there will be some logical reason for it. Yeah, and I guess the best way to contact me is either email al@inventwithpython.com or just messaging me on Twitter, where I'm at Al Swigert. I have a really hard to spell last name. It's Sweigart.
Thank you, Al, for your Python automation awesomeness. For links to everything of value that we talked about in this episode, head on over to testtalks.com/54. And while you're there, make sure to click on the More Info link under the exclusive sponsor section to learn about all of Sauce Lab's awesome products and services. Also, I would love it if you had a second, if you haven't already, to subscribe to Test Talks in iTunes or Stitcher Radio. And while you're at it, I would really appreciate it if you leave a review in iTunes. They go a long way in helping the show get exposure and helping new people come along and see that the show is worthwhile. It really helps in the ratings. I really appreciate any review or any comments you leave. So that's it for another episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.